as a 17-year-old recent high school graduate, I represent the next wave of American voters, a generation that demands government transparency and encourages civic engagement. The actions taken to advance this development jeopardize the core of democratic participation, and while the 13th Avenue Historic District may be small, this precedent of backroom proceedings and silent citizens will ripple across the entire city. Though I generally find myself on the pro-business side of economic discussions, the proposed initiative concerns me for three reasons. First, as an active member of the Portland community and a supporter of dialogue between a government and its citizens, I reject the notion that corporations and politicians can draw plans behind closed doors without acknowledging the input of citizens who will be affected by the decision. Because the choice to increase Pearl East's height to 100 feet was made before John had the opportunity to express his opinion, the decision should not be considered valid. Second, I am concerned by the misrepresentation of data that occurred during previous hearings. Due to the use of high uncertainty satellite approximations by the developers, Pearl East appeared comparatively smaller than it is in reality. While 25 extra feet may seem insignificant, it's telling that a manipulation of the facts was necessary to convince the commission. The purpose of government is to arbitrate conflict between its constituents, and when blatant exaggerations become permissible, the situation yields profoundly unfair results. Third, I am troubled by former PDNA President Patricia Gardner's unreported conflicts of interest and her lack of accountability when choosing not to seek mandatory retroactive board approval for her actions. A governmental decision cannot be considered valid if the public is unaware that its consequences may secretly and disproportionately benefit a given party. While we are here today to discuss the height of a building, what's at stake is far more than 25 vertical feet of concrete and rebar. To approve this development is to sideline future ethical business and reject the transparency and engagement that our citizens demand. Whether you're anti-development, pro-business, or somewhere in between, it is evident that the proposed height increase for Pearl East has not been arrived at through legitimate means. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
The next three are Tracy Prince, Brent McCarter, and Matt Craven.
Hey, John. John, Mr. Hollister, could you grab his test? There you go. Don't want to lose us. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tracy Prince, a faculty member at PSU's Portland Center for Public Humanities, and I write books about race, gender, and social equity. I'm also the vice president of the Goose Hollow Foothills League, and Goose Hollow advocated for lowered heights in this area of the Pearl in the Central City 2035 plan because of exactly what John Hollister has argued. If allowable heights are too high, it will incentivize the demolition of this historic district. I'm also on the board of the Architectural Heritage Center and a member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. Both organizations argue that the most affordable and most sustainable buildings are the ones already built. Research from the National Trust for Historic Preservation shows that in city after city, historic districts help achieve density without demolitions. Yet Oregon has some of the most lax laws for protecting historic buildings than anywhere in the country. Allowing excessive heights on this project will artificially inflate the value of the underlying lots, putting incredible development pressures on the 13th Avenue Historic District. I really appreciate John for spending $5,000 on this appeal, but I'm very disappointed that his Pearl District Neighborhood Association didn't join him on the appeal. As I discovered through John's advocacy and the Northwest Examiner article, the former Pearl president sent land use letters on Pearl letterhead, which the PDNA board was unaware of and did not vote to approve. I have read the PDNA bylaws, which were in place at the time the letters were written, and this is absolutely not allowed. The bylaws explicitly state that any letter not approved by the board should be declared null and void. As John has stated, these letters were important in shaping the Landmarks decision. So it is necessary to reassess the decision. Number one, because of misleading information on nearby heights that Landmarks used to base their decision upon, and because of Landmarks based their decision on letters indicating Pearl District support of increased heights, when in fact this appears to be the opinion of one person and was not endorsed by the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Brent McCarter. I'm a resident of Portland for some time. I bought my home in the University Park area neighborhood in 1976. In all those years, I've watched as Portland has grown and expanded, and at the same time held very precious its areas that would not change, or at least would maintain their historical significance. Areas such as East Portland Grand Avenue, Irvington, Ladd's Addition, most recently near me, Kenton. These are areas where one can look at them and get a sense of what people looked at many, many years ago. And I value that. We use words recently, at times I believe too lightly. Historic, conservation, planning, sustainability. Specific to today's concern, we talk of compatibility in an area of 21 buildings where only two exceed the height of 75 feet. I would suggest that if a building now is going to be built and is compatible, it's hard to understand how it can exceed 75 feet and be that. I drove up this historic district today on the way to this building, and I had that sense of someone who went along the loading docks many, many years ago. And although this new building will respect the facade of a loading dock and the facade of the building, it will tower above some 18 other buildings, and the two that exceed the 75 preferable height were built nearly 100 years ago. I submit this with great respect. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Matt Craven. I'm here as a friend to support John Hollister. John and I have worked together for about 8 years, and one of the things that I've always appreciated about having John on my team is he has a unique ability to collect and correlate and present information in an unbiased and non-judgmental way, which allows decision makers the opportunity to make the most informed decisions possible. As a longtime resident of Northwest Portland, I'm grateful that he's had used this unique ability to collect and present this information to all of you today so that you can make the most informed decision possible. My wife and I have both lived in Northwest Portland for almost 15 years, 10 of those in the Pearl District where we met. The Pearl is such a unique neighborhood, and as someone that travels throughout the country, I see so many cities working to attempt to create the environment and the community and the atmosphere that exists and has existed for so long in the Pearl District, and it's hard. And the historic district is the heart of this. You know, when you walk through the historic district on a summer night, you know, you can't help but turn to whoever you're with and say, this is like walking through a movie set. And in the winter when it snows, Northwest 13 becomes this amazing little village all lit up. It's a special place. So I'm glad that John has had the opportunity today to share this information with all of you to consider as you make a decision that could potentially impact the authenticity of the historic district, which is such a special place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well under 3 minutes.
The next three are Mark Smith, Mary Sipe, and Sean McLeod, and that's all who signed up on the support.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, I guess I'm the first one up. My name's Mary Sipe. Hello again. I just want to say a few things. I've been a Pearl District resident since 2000. I've watched the neighborhood change and grow over the last 17 years. It's my home. When I first moved to the Pearl District, the PDNC restrictions were 7 stories, and then a waiver to that height was granted to the Park Place building at 19 stories. And ever since then, it's been nothing but 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 26, 28-story buildings. I live in a building that is 6 stories tall, and it's flanked by a 28-story building, a 20-story building, and a 26-story building. Imagine that. Let me see here. I scribbled a bunch of notes. Well, originally the area was to be warehouse design, and if you walk through the neighborhood now and you see the high-rise, shiny buildings, it's completely lost that except for little pockets where the neighborhood was first developed. A couple of things that I just want to point out. John is absolutely spot on about the risk and the danger of demolition of existing buildings and the precedents this will set, and I hope you keep that in mind. That's a really, really important issue. I also want to say, like the penthouse, seems like that's, you know, not even being counted as part of the height. And it needs to be included because, again, it sets a precedent. And, again, we're already looking at, well, if you look at it this way, it's so tall, and if you look at it that way, it's so tall. Let's keep it at 75 feet. I am concerned about, I think if you look at the crowd of neighbors that are here today, a letter on a neighborhood association letterhead supporting this project, unfortunately, I do not believe is representative of what the neighbors really want. And I hope you won't give that a lot of credit, because I think there'd be more people here if it wasn't 3 o'clock on a weekday afternoon. I think this comes down to two words. One is, well, so increased height we hear equals density. And density is great for some reason. But what does density do? Density equals more units, and more units equal more money to the developer. It's about money. Let's keep this also to one other word, respect. I think this morning's city council session is a great example of lack of respect. And so to me, that word is really important. And it should kind of be the word of the day. Let's respect this neighborhood. Let's respect the work that went into establishing these guidelines. And let's not just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Thank you.
Very good. And just to clarify the lack of respect at this morning's session, I'm sure you do not mean this august body.
No, I mean the lack of respect shown not just to this body, but to the people here from the city who were participating. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Yeah thank you for saying
anyhow.
So. Thank you for your testimony. There were two other folks.
Yeah,
are they here?
Mark Smith or Sean McLeod.
Are either of those individuals here? Very good. So we will now move to the principal opponent. Ordinarily, they'd have 15 minutes, but we've added 4.5. If you'd like to take that or not, it's your at your discretion. And again, name for the record.
Good morning,
sir.
Mayor Wheeler, members of the council, Stephen Pfeiffer, 1120 Northwest Cooch, Portland, Oregon, 97204. I'm joined here by Phil Kissling and Susanna Stanley. We'll comprise our presentation. We won't take the 20 minutes, I'm fairly confident, because we're reorganized for 15. At the outset, I'm a land use attorney, and I'm familiar with land use appeals. Many of them have a legalistic flavor. Many of them address, I'm sure you agree, to the micro level criteria, the credibility of evidence conflicted in both ways, and a few other things. This appeal does not rise to that level just by the nature of the review. The criteria are highly discretionary. Design guidelines, be it Central City or the landmarks, are just that. There's a lot of flexibility. They're grounded in policy. But we've afforded the commissions, both design and landmark, a lot of latitude. It doesn't turn on traffic counts. It doesn't turn on substantial evidence in any real way. What the evidence is what you see and what the landmarks saw. I will admit, and so my remarks were going to be even shorter than they're going to be, but I came to this hearing confused about what this appeal was about, and it was difficult to prepare because the appeal statement didn't mention any of the guidelines specifically, didn't identify any specific error that the commission made allegedly in applying those guidelines, it was rather kind of a blunderbuss statement, and some of the questions from you of the appellant reflected that. I expected I'd be educated with a much more focused testimony about, again, where the error is allegedly in that Landmarks Commission review. I didn't get that. What I heard from the appellant, and I heard less, frankly, as to the criteria from the other speakers, was he clearly doesn't appreciate or enjoy the procedural process that affords substantial amounts of participation in this commission and any other BDS system in the city. And I practice throughout the state. The transparency of our process, the opportunity for participation, is unparalleled in Portland. Often to some of our collective chagrin, but it's there and it served us well. Secondly, I didn't hear a single guideline or criterion mentioned at any point in the appellant process thus far. Not a one. There's no amplification or greater detail from what was in the written. I still don't know which guideline they think has been violated. What I hear instead is a challenge to the policy that was set by your predecessors. I was on the Planning Commission in 1990 when we set that 100-foot height limit. It was thoughtful. It was deliberate. It was based on a lot of testimony. It took into account the character of this particular historic district. They clearly don't like the policy that's in place. They participated, and maybe they'll succeed in front of you with that height change. I have a very difficult time believing that in a DAR proceeding for this, one of your staff said the height limit was 75 feet. When, as Mike pointed out, and as the maps have reflected since 1990, it is 100 feet, with bonuses of taking it up to 140. Now, that either reflects a misunderstanding or a misrepresentation, and I don't particularly care which, but it doesn't support this appeal in any way. With that, I'm going to leave you with one thought. There is a place where I do agree with the appellant. Your decision on this building, this Landmark's decision of approval, will set a precedent for the district, but it's not the one they claim. The underbuilds in that district, of which there are many one and two stories, some with more architectural character than others, will ultimately be replaced. There's little doubt in my mind. It's not a museum piece. The precedent will flow from what the next building, the new construction thereafter, like this building, looks like. There are two measures of protections that this city has put in place, guarded by the BDS staff and your commission's review, with the ultimate stop at this point with the council. The commission's landmark, the landmark guidelines themselves and the Central City Fundamental Guidelines will dictate the look, feel, massing, and height of any subsequent buildings that are built in this district. This building, I would argue, and you'll decide, sets the bar for those subsequent redevelopments, those subsequent new buildings that are going to be constructed in this district. So if you do think of this as a precedent, I agree. And you'll have to decide whether it's a positive, a neutral, or a negative precedent. But it is a precedent for the next new piece of construction that comes in that district, measured by your commission and staff against those guidelines, and it will happen. And what you decide here will either set that bar or another bar. And I'll leave you with that and turn it over to Phil to talk about what's before us today, which is the building. Following that, Susanna will talk about what otherwise should be before us today, which is the specific findings and criteria that were addressed by the Landmarks Commission and what their conclusions were and why. Thanks.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
My name is Paul Kissling. I'm principal of architecture with McKinsey. We were tasked with designing this project. And first of all, I'd really like to thank the city process. We've had great interaction with city staff, both with Tim and Mike, and our meetings with starting with the pre-application through DAR and two presentations at hearings and then a final unanimous approval from Landmarks Commission for this project. A couple of things we'd like to point out before we go to the next slide is, you know, the 2035 guidelines are not at issue here. We are currently approved in this district at 100 feet, and we certainly started this project with that knowledge, as well as the research of all the guidelines of both Central City and the district. I've been in historic preservation for something over 40 years. I take that very seriously, and our client, who has invested in the city of Portland and in this site, also takes that very seriously. And one of his major marching orders to us was to deliver a building that looked like it had always been in the district. As the planning staff has noted, this is kind of the infill of the missing tooth. It's a significant building, but it is very small and completely adjacent to us when we talk of underbuilding. Just to the south, to the east of us, a building can be placed on that side at 175 feet and still be within the Pearl District overlay. So, I mean, we are balancing our design within the district to without the district. That's the entire Pearl neighborhood, but we're driven specifically by Central City and the neighborhood and the historic neighborhood. And if you want to, we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the amount of outreach that we put out with all of our projects. You know, when we started this project in September of 2015, we worked through our planning staff, of which we have a very robust planning staff, which most of you have probably encountered, researched all these standards. They codify everything for us and start to build the vocabulary that we're going to use to design the project. At an appropriate point, we outreach and set up our pre-application with the city to make sure we clearly understand all the guidelines, all the restrictions. From there, we applied for and had our first DAR, which Landmark gave us a very good review. It was almost an approval hearing. The design was along, but still obviously subject to different people's interpretations and desires. Prior to that DAR, we did present to the AIA Historic Committee and received their support and by a vote of the whole committee. We were not able to present to the neighborhood for their schedule in front of the DAR, but we met with them thereafter, about a month, presented the project to them as it had been and the recommendations that we'd received from the DAR. Their Landmarks Commission votes on whether they're going to support a project. It's not one person's process. And they agreed with concerns that we tried to deal with, that they endorsed the project as well. Height was obviously, in bulk, are very much discussed in all of these proceedings. And on the next slide, we kind of came away from our DAR advice with five major areas we really wanted to address specifically, as well as all of the project's criteria. Height and bulk being one of them, and then also the commission had pretty much told us they could support, as the guidelines require, a 2 to 6 story building in the district. They were uncomfortable if the building appeared to be over 6 story. So that led us to, it was an option whether there was an active roof. As you guys probably realize, around the city, rooftop amenities have become a very desired amenity to offer tenants on commercial office buildings. So we did proceed with a quote penthouse, and it's really a, you know, we refer to it as an active roof. It's well set back from the street wall. The street wall of the building is 86 feet, still below the height criteria, and even at the highest point of the building, we are still below the 100 feet that is currently the standard. And we'd like to point out that height is only one issue of compatibility. If we, you know, we would feel like we could have designed a building 140 feet that would reach, still be compatible with this district and still meet the guidelines. There was discussion with Landmarks that they weren't comfortable with that, and the client was in support of that notion, so we worked in that direction. This is just, you know, our study of massing. The base height of the district is 100 feet, 6-to-1 FAR, with height bonuses to 140 feet, and if you were doing residential, you could have actually went to 175 feet. We're doing office only, retail on the ground floor. The client has an obligation to replace the existing parking that is on that lot that is empty right now. And we are compelled to go underneath the building to provide that parking, which is a relatively expensive endeavor. But we do need to replace the parking. There's discussions on how that parking will be used, obviously for tenants of the building, but after hours in the Pearl, much of the Pearl parking is used by other valet parking or other monthly parkers as well. So it probably will, get the, given the cost of each stall, we'll find a way to maximize their use for the district. As you notice from the site plan, on the east side, we're up against an existing building. And on the north, we are tight against 50 foot of our right, of our 100 feet against the building, and then the confectionery loft sits back 20 feet from the face of our building. In our early discussions, we met with John personally and we presented the project to all of the owners of the confectionery loft. It's a 7-owner condominium, both retail and residential. We offered to build a better facade with their help. We are compelled, as we are built to the property line, to have no openings on our exterior walls, on the inner walls. With their acquiescence, we could potentially pursue a better design right on that street corner in that 20 feet. So far, they've elected to not give us the cooperation, but we do have it as an approved part of our proposal. So we can either give out a blank wall, or with cooperation, we can make it look better. And that's part of the unanimous approval by Landmarks. As you can see, we've kind of set the penthouse back. We are, our neighboring most attributing building is the Keene headquarters across the street from us at 5 stories. We appear to be 6 stories, which is required by the district of 2 to 6. We set our penthouse level back, our active level back, substantially out of sight line, so that the appearance of the building is a 6-story building, very compatible within the district and meeting all the heights. And then section-wise, as you've seen from the staff report, the program is an active roof amenity to the building, creative office space, ground floor retail, highly visible on especially the 13th side with the loading dock, and parking underground. And as you can see, midsummer, when the sun does shine, although we're a little late this year, we do not actually shadow the confectionery lofts building in the middle of the summer. And the buildings next to us are lower and have no openings toward us. Just from an overall above view, the building has an active roof on kind of the 2 street sides. The penthouse is pushed well back. All the mechanical equipment is set on a well behind the penthouse that is at the same level as the actual penthouse deck, if you will, you know, the outside area. It's back behind on that far corner. And then eco roof where we can provide one. And again, when we get done, we want to look down this district and see a building that doesn't look like it's ever been there, or has always been there, excuse me. And one thing I would argue a little bit out of recent experience, historic buildings in the districts have such a high value, they're not necessarily torn down. We recently participated in the remodel of a building just 1 block north of the district at Kearney and 13th as a loading dock. It has now been fully seismically upgraded. It has not gotten any bigger. It's a 2-story building. It's reputedly the oldest warehouse in the district. And it has been a national retailer, Design Within Reach, has taken that building, and it's now an active building, and we participated in that building. So we take the district very seriously, and all the property owners do as well. There are some less significant buildings in the district that may or may not be taken down. And I'll turn over the planning issues to Susanna, who can kind of address the actual findings of the commission, who we support.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'm Susanna Stanley. I'm a land use planner at McKenzie. My goals here for you today, after Paul and Steve, are to first note that we, as representing the applicant, support the Landmarks Commission's decision and the staff report and the Northwest 13th Avenue Historic District design guidelines that were set in the early 90s for this area. And our project meets those goals, as the Landmarks Commission found. And second, I want to talk about compatibility. It's a multi-component concept, and height is one element of compatibility. So we'll talk a little bit about a few key criteria and guidelines of the 13th Avenue Historic District and Central City design guidelines that speak to compatibility and demonstrate how this project is compatible, as the commission found. So one finding that Mike pulled out in his detailed staff report was that item 2 in the Historic District design guidelines is height and bulk. Now, the first elements of this standard are that just general statements that buildings generally are display consistent mass, buildings are typically 2 to 6 stories in height. That those are background statements. Those are not guidelines or standards. The guideline is new construction should likewise be at least equivalent to 2 stories in height, which we are, and should not exceed the maximum allowed height and density requirements in the zoning code. That's a straightforward guideline. Our project beats that guideline. These findings that I have here are from the commission findings and staff report and state that while the building is six stories with a penthouse, it appears to be six stories and it meets the zoning code standards and clearly states it's in keeping with guideline 2 of the 13th Avenue Historic District guidelines. Now, generally, thinking about height guidelines and standards, that the purpose of any height standard is to guide new development. It is not so that all new buildings match the height of existing buildings. The maximum height limit is to move new development in the direction that the district is headed and wants to be moving. And so questions about whether the height standard should be 100 feet or not in the base zone are a completely separate conversation. Our proposal meets the zoning code standards and historic district guidelines in place at the time of the proposal. And we've had some questions about the heights of other buildings. So here's a few photos. The Irving Street Lofts is seven stories. It's eight-story equivalent, has a large ground floor with a penthouse on top. The Wyden and Kennedy building, these buildings are all within the 13th Avenue Historic District. The Wyden and Kennedy is five stories in one area, six stories in an area, plus a penthouse. And Chownpella is up to seven stories at the southern portion. And our GIS data that we provided is from the Metro Regional GIS system, and the metadata indicate that it was provided by the City of Portland Permitting Services. And it indicates the ranges of heights shown here up to 127, 120.
What is GIS?
Oh, Geographic Information Systems, excuse me. It's mapping data specific to it's geocoded data for each building. Yeah, so we referred to permitting services data for the heights here. A couple other findings. Those were the height focused is guideline 2 I presented previously. But other guidelines do speak to compatibility. Compatibility can include materials, the dock, as Mike has emphasized. Full lot line buildings, which are also a requirement in the 13th Avenue District, and the windows and other historic patterns, quite a few components. Height is one of them. So these are just a few. You don't have to read this, but just, you know, so I've pulled out here guideline 4, scale and proportion. New buildings should be of scale and proportion that's compatible with historic architectural pattern. The findings clearly stated that it was. The loading dock and the three-part design were consistent. 5 is materials, color, and texture. The findings clearly stated that our brick materials, colors, and textures were appropriate. Now to the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, which also apply, speaking to several other character-defining features of the building, unifying elements, identifying areas. Findings stated that we've done that with the design and brick and dock. 7 and 8 are urban enclosure.
Can I stop you and ask a question?
Yes.
Can you
yes.
Stop the clock. So you have 20 seconds left.
I have one slide left, and I can generalize.
Okay. I just wanted to give you that warning.
Thank you.
Great. Go ahead.
Well, this is stuff that we deal with all the time, but you don't have to get into the details. But these are design guidelines, which guide the proposal. They're not standards. They're not clear and objective standards, they're guidelines. And these generally speak to urban enclosure, streetscape. The thoughtful findings created by Mike after the commission's hearings speak to how the building meets all of these design guidelines. Here's a couple more, context of existing buildings and coherency. So
I'd ask the commission to look to the left on this last slide. I mean, this is what we're meeting for our client's challenge and the district, so that building looks like it has always been in this district.
Mayor, I have a couple of questions.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you for your presentation. And let me start with Steve. What is the precedent we're setting here? The guidelines allow up to 100 feet. The appellant has expressed concern about setting a precedent for future redevelopment. Strictly speaking, what is the precedential value of whatever decision we come to today?
Commissioner, that's a fair point, and I guess I wouldn't have used the precedent if not to make the point that it was made first by others.
Right.
Because as I've argued to this body and others, in a quasi-judicial land use context like this where specific criteria are applied to a specific building, it's difficult to set a precedent unless you're interpreting a code provision or something. These provisions are so flexible and nuanced and subjective that you're going to be hard-pressed to be forced to repeat that interpretation over and over again. The way I see it is the policy statement was made by the city in a variety various settings, but essentially in 1990 when we adopted the plan update and the new code. That resulted in this map, both EXD and the mapping of the 100-foot corridor on 13th. That's the macro policy. In an absence, a design overlay or a landmarks, a historic district, as in this case, as you all know, that is the maximum height, and people are entitled as of right to get there if they don't need discretionary review of some kind. Now you superimpose the sub-policies of design review and landmarks, or historic in this case, be it on a building or a district. There's some debate, not in my mind, those superimposed next set of sub-criteria allow the commission and the BDS staff to reduce an approved project below what's otherwise allowed in the base code. You can reduce the height from 100 feet if it's required to meet those guidelines in design or landmarks. So that gets you down to the precedent question. The question would be, to this point, let's say there's another building that shows up, either in another Bucktooth open space or be it a redevelopment or a casualty loss. The precedent will be, what are the elements we expect of a new building that should be replicated in the applicant's design to ensure that the guidelines are met? And it's what Susanna talked about here. Everybody's focused on height. Height is only one of many factors in compatibility with the existing district. And what Mike talked about, and I think Susanna echoed, the loading docks are a paramount example unique to that district of something that should be replicated. And the Landmarks Commission said that here. The distressed brick, for lack of a better term, some of the ornamental designs, cornices, the three tripart construction that Mike referred to, those are all things I would expect the Landmarks Commission, being the sitting members or the next generation of members, to go back and say, let's look at the last big new construction we did in this district and see what it wanted to be and what we made sure it was. And those are the elements you would then tick off. And staff in a DAR would say, here's what that building offered up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you can't meet this, you might want to try again.
So that's helpful. Thank you. My next question is, from time to time, even in a quasi-judicial proceeding, I think of our role as a referee, at least to the extent of making sure the process was clean. And there could come a time when there's enough evidence of irregularities that we might say we want to send it back to make sure that what comes back to us is clean. You've heard some of the claims made in this hearing about whether people had authority to submit letters, whether there was enough public process. Without asking you to take, you know, to give your judgment on all those claims, from your perspective, at what point would we reach a point that we'd be well served to send it back to the deciding body to make sure it's a clean decision before we rule on it?
I'll answer it in reverse. In my experience, in this city and elsewhere, it is almost seldom, if ever, because there wasn't an opportunity for somebody to present their view or their proposal below. That's not a reason for remand in the city of Portland. There were no procedural flaws here. There's no allegation of somebody not receiving necessary notice, mail notice, the 400-foot radius. There was the ability to attend a DAR. I do a lot of DARs, and it's rare to find anybody there other than the applicant or BDS. Mr. Hollister apparently attended that DAR. He also attended 1, 2, and perhaps even, I have to go back and look, 3 public hearings, and his direct request for a continuance to allow him more time to submit yet another round of input and testimony led to a 3rd hearing, or at least an opportunity to comment. This process took 1.5 years in a state where the statute is 120 days absent a waiver. Now, there were ample opportunities below, and if that wasn't enough, he had a full opportunity today with a de novo opportunity to present new evidence with time given him by the grace of this council for more opportunity. I see no legal flaw in the procedure, and there's certainly no practical flaw. Anybody who testified today had notice. Nobody was deprived of notice. What would be the basis for a remand? It would delay the project. Interest rates ticked up again today, another 0.25 point. It will jeopardize this project if this is delayed that much longer. you're not going to see a change in a unanimous design commission vote, I would suspect. So I don't see a basis for a remand, Commissioner. What I see is a hard decision of the three alternatives you have is two, deny or approve. Because a remand back to a unanimous landmarks commission who spent a year and a half and three hearings going through this process is highly unlikely to change its mind.
Thank you.
Commissioner Udaly.
I'm just seeking clarity along the same lines as Commissioner Fish. I believe there is this bone of contention over a letter issued by PDNA indicating a general support from the Neighborhood Association of this project. It sounded like one of you, and I'm sorry, I'm jet-lagged right now and very tired. One of you said that perhaps it was a subcommittee that took the vote, and then a letter was issued. Well, I'm trying to clarify where that letter came from and what it really reflects.
I guess I'd offer 2 points. First of all, I wasn't there, Commissioner, but Paul can speak to the process. Secondly, that is not a criterion for landmarks approval. That is not a criterion for your approval, and that is not a basis for denial, even if it's true.
That was my second question. What weight?
Yeah,
would
the answer is frankly none, other than. Either an admonition or a gentle reminder to the Neighborhood Association that they didn't get it right, to get it right next time, but it does not reflect on the process, compliance with your code, nor does it provide a basis for council to do anything other than think about it. At the end of the day, they are only one participant in a very transparent, open process. And as you know well, we have 86 Neighborhood Associations now, I think.
Oh, 95, uh-oh. I want to say.
Been a while since I've had to think about that. There, one more layer of input. The real implication of a neighborhood association, as I know you know, is that it affects the appeal fee that an appellant has to file if, in fact, it's the neighborhood association for very good policy reasons that files it. That's it. Now, we may have someone from the neighborhood association speaking after us because there's still an opportunity, but I can't promise it.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions, colleagues?
Thank
very
you.
Good. Thank you. We appreciate it. Next up are opponents of the appeal who would like to speak for 3 minutes.
The first three, please come on up, are David Dysart, Patty Gardner, and Riza Farhoudi.
Come on up. And again, name for the record. We don't need your address. At least I don't believe we do. Legal counsel, we don't need addresses for the hearings. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is David Dysart. I'm on the PDNA Neighborhood Planning and Transportation Committee. I also live and work on 13th Avenue, a block from this site. And I just wanted to make the point. I think the defendants have made a solid case about the zoning. This site has been 100 feet. I have the guidelines here for the historic district written in 1996. That 100-foot zoning was there the whole time. And the guidelines specifically stating that that height should be appropriate to the zoning code is very clear. In terms of the Neighborhood Association, the strange thing is I see a lot of people in this room who are opposed to this project, and I have yet to see any of them attend one of our meetings. We are a very open committee. We welcome new members. There's a clear process to participate and to provide input and become a member and a voting member. We do not write letters. I've never seen Patty write a letter on her own without the support of the committee. She's very clear to call a vote, and we deliberate. We are independent, and we form an opinion, and we vote on it. So I really resent the insinuation here that there's something underhanded or untoward. The architects came before us twice. The first time they came before us, Patty actually wasn't an active chair at the moment. The second time, she was. We voted on it. We deliberated it. We found the project to be very compatible. And we support it. And we wrote a letter in support of that. And it's as simple as that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, Patty Gardner here. We actually wrote two letters. There was a first letter written by Kate Washington, who was the planning chair at the time. I've They are part of the record. I've re-put them in again. That was written in May of 2016. I was not engaged at all in the committee at the time. I was not even at any of the meetings deliberating this. And then there was a second letter written because John Hollister came to the committee and presented to the committee, presented his side. We probably weren't going to even take a vote, you know, on this project because we already had a vote in the record. And we took a vote at that time after John presented, not before John presented, after John presented, we wrote another letter. So there have been a lot of lies, slander, innuendo, unfounded personal attacks of me, which I absolutely do not appreciate. But that doesn't negate a couple of things. And you have asked about some zoning stuff, and I want to talk about that because let's talk about zoning. In the 2035 plan, we asked specifically, and you can go to that Planning Commission hearing that was also slandered, we put in a letter that asked for all the bonuses to be taken off the historic district. If you think about it, the current building is 8-1 FAR. If the bonuses were gone, it would be 6-1. It would be a smaller building. We've targeted the bonuses hard. And so 2035, there will be no bonuses on the historic district. That's going to make a huge difference. You'll never get above the base height on any project. You'll never be able to add any FAR off of what the base FAR, which is 4-1. So that's important. The other important thing is that's also in code. Where's that 75-foot number coming from? It's coming from a lot of work on my part in the North Pearl Plan, where I got a 75-foot reduction of height from Lovejoy all the way to the river. It's 50-foot setback on 13th Avenue, both sides. We have a two-block gap that is between Johnson and Lovejoy that will be part of the 2035 plan. Well, there will be a 75-foot setback along 13th Avenue for the first 50 feet, and it's going to go, if I'm victorious, it'll go from Johnson all the way to the river. And the reason we did that was, again, to try to have that feel like a special street. We know it's special, and we know that historic buildings are imperiled, and we've been working very hard through the process to make sure that they're protected. Thank you.
Ms. Gardner, I just have one question. Because you were singled out, I think it's only fair that we give you a chance to respond to one of the allegations.
Yeah.
I don't do this to embarrass you or to highlight it,
sure,
but it's in the record.
Sure.
So I think fairness dictates we give you a chance. One of the claims that you've now addressed has to do with the process and transparency. I think the two letters you have before us fully respond to that. But there's a claim that you had some kind of conflict of interest. And conflict of interest as a concept that we apply usually means there's some undisclosed personal financial stake in something that's before us that if it was disclosed might result in a recusal of some kind. So would you care to respond to that?
I have no conflict of interest regarding this project. I don't work for the developer, don't work for the architect, have nothing to do with that. It was put in the paper that I was, for some reason, that I was working with Al Solheim. I worked with Al Solheim, I think, up until like the beginning part of 2012, and I haven't worked for him since. So I don't understand where the conflict of interest is coming from. I would argue that having a conflict of interest, being a condo owner who wants to use a neighborhood association to protect your view right next door, that might be a conflict of interest. And so just, you know, I have none, and that's just reality.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Well, first of all, thank you for your long time service to the Neighborhood Association. I'm hoping your memory is better than mine, because I know we did discuss this in the Comprehensive Plan and in the West End Plan.
Yeah.
And we had a specific discussion about the historic district, didn't we?
Yeah.
And so what did we end up deciding? And
so in the historic district, we, like I said, we took off all the bonuses. And so what I was told at the time by staff that if we tried to take all the bonuses off and we reduced the height, it would be a taking. And so we focused all our effort, every bit of our effort, in eliminating all bonuses. And so that means, that, like I said, no FAR, no height. You know, you got to, like, what you get is what you get. And when that code changes, that's going to be, so that's where we ended up. and that's a big deal.
And did we leave the height at 100 feet?
We did, and the reason why it's 100 feet, and it comes back to 1990, is because we have a number, the conversation about that is we also have a number of historic buildings that are over 75 feet, so all of the historic buildings inside the district would be out of compliance. And so, again, staff, and this is very wonky, but the staff was not in favor of reducing it, one, for taking, and two, because it made every taller historic building, non-conforming, basically.
And my last question, the current proposal does rely on that bonus. Would this this proposal be allowed under the new system?
Under the new system, they would not get that 8-to-1 FAR. They would have gotten a 6-to-1 FAR. There was no if the code existed today, there is no way it would be the size it is. Be just from a square footage. It might be the height, but it wouldn't be the size, the
right.
bulk.
Okay, I was just trying. We obviously had a lot of controversy. We've got two new members of the council who were involved in those decisions.
I really appreciate the question.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thanks for having me here. My name is Reza Farhudi. I'm a co-chair of the Pearl District Planning and Transportation Committee. I want to walk you guys through the process and how we got to this point. April 19th last year, the developer came to our committee. Patty was not involved in the committee at that time. Kate Washington was the chair, the planning chair. I'm the transportation chair of the committee. We voted on it and voted in support. We like the fact that it fit the character of the neighborhood almost a bit too well. We actually wanted to see a little more variation. We supported the garage entrance on Gleason because we wanted to protect the integrity of Northwest 13th and the historic district by not having the garage entrance on 13th. And, with the base height and with the maximum height of 100 feet and the maximum FAR of 6-to-1, this project met code. And those guidelines requirements were established in the 1988 Central City Plan. So we're going back 30 years here. I just want to make this point. We play an advisory role as a neighborhood association. We play an advisory role in this process. We compare the proposed height and FAR to what's in the code already. And it is not our place to relitigate the code each time a new building comes to our committee. And if we're telling the developer that they're not allowed to build to the maximum height in the code, that is tantamount to a land use taking. So just to be clear, we are dispassionate observers in this process. We only serve an advisory role, and I cannot make this any more clear. There is no substantiated proof of any conflict of interest. None whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Carolyn Dow, Kirk Ranzetta, and Glenn Tonisi, I believe is the last name.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And just, Carla, a time check. How many more people do we have?
I have one more after
Very
these
good.
Three.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and City Council members. My name is Kirk Ranzetta, and I'm the chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission. I'm here today to provide the council with some very brief comments concerning the appeal of our decision to approve the Pearl East building. But before I begin my testimony, I wanted to convey my respect for Mr. Hollister and everyone who's testifying today. I feel that through all their efforts about raising awareness about the issues with neighborhood character in the city of Portland, is facing. I wish we had more people like the folks here today who would take an interest in the places that really make Portland matter. In our final analysis for this building under the Northwest 13th Avenue Historic District Guidelines and the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, after reviewing the staff report and also considering public testimony, it was the belief of the commission that the height of the Pearl East building was in fact compatible. And when we considered the height in this particular case, I just want to reinforce the fact that we do consider it on a case-by-case basis. The commission felt that the applicant had made significant strides in terms of the architectural detail, the setback of the penthouse, the integration of quality design features, overall window fenestration pattern and to building materials to justify the additional height on the building. I think it was stated earlier that all of those factors kind of play into an almost mitigation for the height, that if you're going to make a building a little bit taller in a historic district, that it often helps to have more compatible features so that the building resonates or has a dialogue with those buildings that are adjacent to it. And so the commission absolutely did take into account the physical context of the site and its proximity to other buildings that were similar or close to similar in terms of scale massing and height. Commission typically also considers height on a case-by-case basis because we're constantly in this balancing act between detail and other factors. So that's basically it. Any questions?
Commissioner Fritz.
I just want to stress what you just said, that you do consider on a case-by-case basis. Okay. That the Landmarks Commission has said that you cannot build to the maximum height in other cases, right? If it,
correct.
There's not enough mitigation for that if it doesn't fit in.
Correct. And, I mean, just as a point in matter, I mean, if that other, there was another more modern building that was outside the historic district that was shown as an example, if you were to include that in a historic district, we'd be like, you know, we would probably want some other, something else to kind of mitigate for the overall modern approach to the design. And so you're constantly kind of going back and forth between, you know, what the design guidelines say, what the entitlements are, and trying to come up with a happy medium.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your volunteering.
Sure. You're welcome.
My name is Caroline Dow. I'm a former Historic Landmarks Commissioner. I was actually present at the initial DAR. I was also a former chair of the Boise Neighborhood Association. The last time I was this close to Commissioner Fritz, we were moving the Edwin Rayworth down Mississippi Avenue, 2 miles north, in 2013. So I've spent the last 10 years of my life in civic engagement, particularly around reducing demolition reducing residential demolitions. And that was my role at the Landmarks Commission. And so I do remember this design advice request. It sounds to me like the system, I know there's a lot of situations where you feel like the system isn't working, the intent of the zoning code isn't being met. I don't think this is one of those cases. I've been a part of new developments, especially in Mississippi and North Williams, where community design guidelines are used. Infill is, you know, terrible, low-quality materials. And again, I don't think this, I think this is an example of a process that has worked. So the applicant attended neighborhood association meetings. I'm assuming that those meetings were announced. And I personally have had a couple grievances filed against me as a chair of the neighborhood association. And it's not fun when that happens, but usually it's surrounding notification. Somebody, the letter of support is written, and somebody feels like they weren't notified. And you have to dig into the bylaws and clarify what your notification procedures are. I've also rewritten bylaws. I'd be curious to know if a formal grievance has been filed in this situation with the parent coalition. If it has not, there's a good indication there that the bylaws, they were acting pursuant to the bylaws of the neighborhood association. So I would urge you guys to ask that question. And then is a grievance open within the parent coalition, and what is the status of that grievance? I guess I'll just end real quick. I think, this is high-quality infill. One other thing I take issue with is the notion that this is an altruistic effort to reduce demolitions. I think that's a little bit misleading. I think we want to be really careful when we say that there's developments that are incentivizing demolition. I don't think this building is one of them. I think that this is a building that we can be proud of. High-quality materials, loading dock, the design overlay, they've done everything right. And I actually went and listened to the original tapes for the original design advice request, and John Hollister himself says, you know, this is a gorgeous building. You know, this is going to happen anyway. I wish it wasn't happening. And I sympathize with him because of the height and where that penthouse is located and maybe where he lives. But I would say that I would just urge you guys to respect the process that's been undertaken, the choices that were made by the neighborhood association. We should empower neighborhood associations to write these letters and have them upheld. And then the Landmarks decision as well. I think we should uphold those.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Glenn Traeger. I'm a member of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association Board and also the Planning and Transportation Committee. I'm here to represent myself, not the board right now. I'd like to make two statements and make two points. As far as the issue about height, I think it's pretty simple and clear. The existing height is 100 feet for the current code. It's been there for over 20 years. It seems like a lot of the dialogue we're talking about is maybe changing heights, but the height is pretty specific. So is the building over 100 feet or is it under? I think it's pretty simple and clear for the commission here to make a decision on that. Also, you have to look at the building in context, okay? One is just the way the building looks in this historical district, and I don't think there's anybody here that would probably disagree that this is a beautiful building and it's in a great framework for the neighborhood. Also, the building, as far as the land use, the building is compatible with the existing neighborhood around it. One of the reasons that the Pearl is such a desirable neighborhood.